Thank you for traveling with Amex Platinum. To your right, you'll see Oceanside Relaxation at a fine hotel and resort property. When booked through Amex Travel, you can enjoy complimentary breakfast for 2 and 4 p.m. late checkout. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
Welcome in to the New Orleans Pelicans Podcast, the official podcast of your New Orleans Pelicans, a podcast dedicated to everything you need to know about the squad. Hear from players, coaches, broadcasters, and those who cover the NBA on a daily basis. It's time to flock up. The New Orleans Pelicans Podcast starts right now.
It is Friday, even though it feels like a Monday for some reason. Maybe it's the weather outside, but all I know is it's game day. Welcome to another edition of the New Orleans Pelicans Podcast, the official podcast of your New Orleans Pelicans. How do I know it's official? Well, Jim Eichenhofer, sitting across from me here in the studio, is wearing an official Pelicans pullover. Did you get that? Did you buy that? Or did you swindle that? How did you
come I hate come to say this, but I don't buy very much stuff anymore. Well, I try to wait for the freebies.
That's how it works.
Yeah.
So that does make you an official Pelicans correspondent, reporter, of course. Pelicans.com. Jim always puts up each and every game day the five things to look for. I always use that for my show prep when I do the talk show because you do such a great job on that.
Thanks, Gus.
I'm very curious for this version of the top five things because I wonder what kind of adjustments this team is going to make. One of those rare things during the season where you're going to play a team back-to-back games, just not back-to-back nights. Let's go back on Wednesday. Pacers do win it, 123-114. The first quarter, Jim, you take that away, a 40-24 Pacer first quarter. Pelicans win the second. Pelicans win the third. Pelicans win the fourth. In the fourth, they get to as close as 3 points, and Pacers hit a couple of threes to put it away. But what did you take away from that game, and what's going to be in your column today or your five things to take away in terms of maybe adjustments for tonight?
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely mandatory what you just touched on, that they get off to a better start, that they're not down by 16 points after the first quarter, and I think that got up to 20 at the beginning part of the second quarter. So a better start. They have to be better transition defense-wise. Indiana won fast break points 21-8. So, I mean, there's two sides to that. One, you gave up too many fast break points, but, I mean, only scoring 8. Sometimes you wonder if against a team like this, even though you don't really want to get into an up-and-down kind of back-and-forth game with them, if the way that you attack them sometimes is by running yourself so that maybe you can put them on their heels a little bit. It felt like the Pelicans, especially first quarter, first half, were just reacting to what the Pacers were doing instead of taking it to them. Pacers had 34 assists in that game, which they're one of the best teams in the league at assists, so that wasn't that surprising, but that's too high of a number as well. It seemed like their ball movement did a lot of damage, and they were able to get open shots, whether it was from runouts in transition or just swinging the ball around and getting open threes. They made a bunch from the corner in the game Wednesday. So defensively, I definitely think that's where it starts tonight. Another area that I want to see improvement is the bench. Pacers won bench scoring 44-24. Now, some of the Pelicans players that come off the bench, you don't necessarily look to them for scoring, yeah. In particular Larry Nance and Najee Marshall. So, but I think the Pacers bench had too good of a game, and you want to make sure that they don't repeat that tonight to be able to win on the road in the Smoothie King Center.
Do you know the science between the plus or minus in that column of a box score?
In terms of
what makes it plus, what makes it minus?
It's basically just points scored, points against while a certain player is in the game during that time.
Okay, so like while you're on the court, essentially, like let's just take a McConnell, that guy. Plus 12, he had a massive impact in a game. Sorry, plus 9. Nine assists, 4 rebounds, 8 points. So when I see plus 9, what does that mean? They scored 9 more points than the Pelicans while he was in there?
Yeah, while McConnell was in the game, they scored 9 more points than the Pelicans did. Now, the interesting thing, there's a lot of, I don't know if debate is the right word, about plus minus because there's so many factors. I do think that single game plus minus is a little bit overrated, because sometimes you could put me out there with four of the best players in the NBA and my plus minus might be plus 26 at the end of the game.
And you had nothing to
do
with it.
I did nothing. I stood in the corner and like drank a soda and had some popcorn. Mm-hmm. So
I wanted to bring that up because I think a lot of our Carlos sometimes do that, and people that cover the team bring that up because of what you just said. Their bench was plus everything, right? Mm-hmm. Toppin plus three, Smith was plus 12, McConnell plus nine, Shepard was plus seven. And then you look at the top three players for the Pelicans, CJ McCollum had 23 points. Zion Williamson had 23 points. Mm-hmm. Brandon Ingram, Jim, and I'm going to get to this in a quick second, he had 30 points, 13 free throws, which was incredible. But you look at their plus minus, Zion minus 13, CJ minus 19, Brandon minus three. So was that just because of that first quarter?
Yeah, a lot of it was because of that. And okay. I think you see one of the things that you can kind of take away from plus minus sometimes is you might look at a player who has a really good individual game or good stats, but if he's in the minus, it just shows you that, I mean, someone has to score the points. So the Pelicans lost the first quarter 40-24. Somebody's going to get those 24 points and put up numbers. And I think I'm trying to remember the beginning. I can't remember now if the beginning of the third quarter was a positive or a negative for the starting five. But we've seen a lot of games this year, unfortunately, where the starters at the end of the night, several of them have good numbers, good stats, but their plus minus is negative because the team has gotten off to a bad start in both the first quarter and the third quarter. So the bench actually, I'd have to look at this over the course of the season, but in general, especially relative to what you expect from the first unit and the bench has been better relative to the rest of the league. The bench has been top five in mm-hmm. plus minus for most of the season. So it's something that, and I think that's actually a direct reason why we've heard Willie Green at times mentioned recently over the last few weeks, you know, maybe we can tweak the starting lineup. Maybe we'll think about changes because, right. you know, it doesn't matter if you have individual guys who produce, if the group overall is losing games constantly or getting off to bad starts in both halves, it's something that you might want to look at and see. Maybe we can change one guy and that'll be a domino effect and make, you know, produce much better results.
And that's why I want to ask you that, because you can explain that a lot better to me, because quite honestly, it all gets anything. There's math. I'll just ask Jim. It's Friday, which means we're going to bring in a member of the broadcast team. And I don't know, maybe it, you know, we'll do some TV, we'll do radio here as well. It basically depends who takes our phone call.
Right.
And is available on a Friday. But it's John DeShazer today. He's been away for a little bit, enjoying a little vacation time, but he's back at it. He'll be up there with the Graph tonight. Here's his thoughts on a couple of things that have to do with the Pels and also, of course, getting ready for tonight's game against the Pacers. Enjoy. All right, time to welcome in our guest, our very special guest. It's been a little bit, but doesn't feel like it has been that long. Mr. John DeShazer, color analyst for your New Orleans Pelicans on the Pelicans Radio Network. Sir, did you enjoy a little time off?
Enjoy some time off. And actually, it does feel like a long time. It feels like a long time since I've been not just on the podcast, but actually at a game since before the All-Star break. And so, man, I'm ready to jump back on the horse and get into it. And you know, we got a playoff team here, so let's ride.
Here's the beauty of it. The standings haven't really changed because everybody's close. Every game still sort of matters. Pel's game still going down to the end. So, yeah, see, it's almost like nothing's really changed.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, the Western Conference is what it is, man. Teams are bunched up, and it's tighter than compression socks. I mean, if you lose a couple of games, you fall down to eighth or ninth. And if you win a couple of games and somebody else loses a couple, you might jump up to fifth. It's just jockeying for position, and you got a clump of teams right there on each other's necks. So you can't really afford to slip much.
I'm curious, JD, to see your reaction to what the crowd is like tonight, because one of the things that I think a lot of people noted in the first couple home games after the All-Star break, excuse me, now I know part of this was there was a little bit of a altercation during the Miami game and that added to the intensity, but I thought that there was more noticeable urgency that the team showed, even the crowd showed, the fans showed. Is that something that you've sensed already, that there's kind of a switch that's been flipped into the mode of there's 22 games left and it's time to get serious?
Yeah, there's a fervor involved because I think fans are looking at the standings, hopefully knowledgeable, saying, you know what, this team's got a chance to get in the playoffs. This team's got a chance to not be in the play-in. This team's got a legitimate chance to hopefully win a playoff series. And so that mm-hmm. kind of excites – it should excite everybody because – you know, this city has been pining for a winning basketball team, right? Now you've got one that looks like it can be a winning basketball team, 35-25 at the moment. And so here's the opportunity to show your basketball knowledge, you know, not just to come out, you know, when the Lakers come to town, but you need to come out when it's, you know, Orlando or Cleveland or whoever. Tonight it happens to be Indiana, which is a really good matchup because the Pacers are a fun team to watch. They ain't a fun team to play, but they're a fun team to watch. And so, you know, a knowledgeable basketball fan might say, you know what, I don't know a whole lot of people on that team, but I know they got a winning record. I know they're fun to watch. You should know Tyrese Haliburton if you don't, by the way. But you should be interested in seeing the game. And now you've got a good enough team that should draw you in, not just to come in to see an opponent play. And, you know, a Steph Curry, you got guys on this team that you should want to come out and see play.
And I know he's going to get into the sense of urgency or really how important all these final 22 are. But you were just talking about Indiana. I'm looking at their, you know, their standings. They're 13 games back of Boston. Orlando's 13 games back of Boston in sixth. Philly's 13 games back of Boston in fifth. The Knicks are 12 games back of Boston in fourth. So Indiana's only one game out of fourth, sitting at seventh. So the point being, this is a huge game for them. It's a massive difference, 7-4, right?
Yeah, hell,
I mean,
yeah.
Play into holding to hosting a first round series.
That's a good squad, and that's a team. Whether I'm home or whether they're the road team or whether they're the home team, I don't necessarily know if I'm in the Eastern Conference. I want to see Indiana on the other side of my bracket because you play them, you better be ready to score. Now, they're not going to stop you, but you better be ready to score, and you better be ready to score consistently because they're going to apply pressure the entire game. So that's a team where, you know, shooting comes and goes generally for most teams. It doesn't seem to come and go for them a whole lot. And so when you play a team like that, man, it only takes four. It's a seven-game series. You got to win four of them. You just got to be hot in four of them. Mm-hmm. You know, so you can be hot in four and cold as heck on three and still win the series. So that's the kind of team I would not want to be bothered with.
JD, you mentioned how the Pelicans are at a place now where they're not a team where you just – when you look at do I want to go to this game, you just look at who they're playing against. They have a bunch of guys that people really like to watch play. And I feel like the attachment to this team is really – high and at a level that I don't think I've seen maybe ever. Maybe we'd have to go back to like 2008. You know, one of the things I wanted to ask you about kind of from a bigger picture standpoint is that, like myself, you've been here for quite some time now and you've seen the evolution of the team and you've seen kind of a bunch of different iterations of how they've tried to build the squad. What are some of your kind of bigger picture overviews of the development of the youth and some of the younger players on this team and just the way that they've drafted? I mean, Herb Jones, I think probably since the last time we talked to you, has even become a different player from a few weeks ago, just how he's improved offensively. But how do you view just the approach that they've taken and the progress that they've made with drafting and being consistent with that part of it?
Well, a couple of things. It screams how inexact drafting is. And two, it screams that you don't know what's inside a guy.
Yeah.
Because people looked at Herb Jones and say, well, he's hit his ceiling. Well, had he? He's 20, 21, 22 years old. That's his ceiling? That's as good as he's going to be in life? You kidding me? Mm-hmm. Trey Murphy, same thing. People looked at him, hey, he's hit his ceiling. Well, maybe he has not. And obviously he has not. So you look at that. You look at Dyson Daniels, who was coming on strong before he got injured. You look at Jordan Hawkins, and we've seen flashes from him. And so you see those flashes. You understand, look, he's got a lot more inside of him. Drafting is so inexact when people look at guys and say, okay, I see what his ceiling is. He played in college for 3-4 years. That's about as good as he's going to be. Well, Herb Jones is nothing close to the guy he was at Alabama.
No.
It doesn't even resemble the same person that he was at Alabama. One, he was playing hurt for a while. And two, he was a guy who literally could not shoot at Alabama. So he gets here, he gets a guy, you know, Fred Vincent, who is a guru when it comes to helping guys, you know, correct their shots and that kind of thing. And he works on it. You can't measure what's inside a guy, what his work ethic is when he gets to the league and says, you know what, I am burning to be better. So Herb Jones came in burning to be better, not just as an offensive player, but his defense has gotten better. And he was a heck of a defensive player at Alabama. Now he is an all defensive team kind of player on defense. And so, again, the Pelicans, you know, you draft guys, but I think they've done a better job as good a job of kind of getting into the guy's psyche and finding out what makes him go and whether or not that makes him a good fit. Because you got to kind of understand, okay, is this guy self-motivated, or are we going to have to, like, call him and wake him up to get him out of bed? Well, Herb lives in the gym. he might have a bed in the gym. So you got to run him out of the gym. You know, those are the kind of guys who, when you get guys like that, you can't put a ceiling on them because you don't know what it is, because, you know, he's got more room to grow and he's going to extract every bit out of it that he possibly can. So, you know, when you draft guys, if you can get into the psyche and find out, okay, this is our kind of guy, this guy burns to be better, you can have hits in the draft as the Pelicans have had. And you can have hits as, you know, with undrafted guys, with Jose Alvarado, you know, Najee Marshall. You get guys who fit the psyche of what you're looking for, guys who are burning to be better instead of guys who are saying, you know what, I made it to the league, I'm good.
One of the things that you said about, you know, people have gotten to the point, I think a lot of this is because so many of the players drafted in the lottery or the first round are one and done guys. And so we've gotten to the point with this mentality that if you played 4 years in college, you can't get better. If you're 21 or 22, you're tapped out, your potential has already been realized. And one of the things that always cracks me up to think about when I hear people say that is, like, if that's the case, that means for the vast majority of the history of the NBA, every single player who came into the league was 21 or 22. I mean, guys didn't play 1 year in college. So, I mean, if you applied that to 1985 or 1995, you would say every single player that came into this draft can't get better.
Can you imagine applying that to Kareem nowadays? Kareem couldn't play as a freshman, played 3 years at UCLA, and he'd come out and they'd say, well, you know, that's as good as he's going to be.
Yeah.
You know, he's not going to be any better than that right there. Right. Like, hey, that's it right there. He's going to get to the league, and he's tapped out. He's hit his ceiling.
Yeah.
Man, I mean, it's ridiculous to think a guy at 22 years. I shudder to think what I was at 22.
Mm-hmm.
A raggedy human being. So you're talking about guys who, yeah, they're athletic, and they haven't even hit the peak of their physical abilities yet.
Mm-hmm.
They haven't, like, had a chance to basically hone in, and this is my job. This is what I do every day, all day. I don't have to worry about going to class. I don't have to worry about anything else, nothing peripheral. I can block out a certain amount of time, and this is my job. This is what I do. That gives guys, I think, a great opportunity to get better.
One of the things, while we have you here, too, JD, one of the things I always like about listening to you, whether it's on the games or, you know, here on the podcast, just in general, is I feel like you have a lot of wisdom. And one of the things I wanted to bring up with you based on that was I wanted to talk, if we could, briefly about the unwritten rules of basketball and some of your thoughts. It feels like there's been a more incidents lately than usual. And I think one of the problems with the unwritten rules is they literally are unwritten. So it feels like everyone has a different definition of what's cool and what's not cool. But, for example, in the Charlotte Golden State game recently, there was a little scuffle at the end of the game because Golden State scored with like 5 seconds left, even though there was still time on the shot clock. JD, unwritten rules, give me your takeaways.
Well, I think you hit the nail on the head. One, you need to write them all down and put them in every locker room so everybody knows. You know, two, it's like, when did it become like vogue, I guess, or okay to just not compete?
Right.
You know, you play the game. Mm-hmm. You know, so you're up, you know, 18 with a minute and a half left, and you got guys who are on the court who are the 12th and 13th man on the team, or two-way guys, who practice their tails off to give you a good look on offense and defense in practice, who go through all the same rigmarole as, you know, Zion Williamson and LeBron James and all those guys. And then you send them in the game, you tell them, okay, don't score. Don't stop playing.
Right.
You know, hold the ball and commit a turnover. No, play the game. Your job is to stop me, and my job is to attempt to score. That's what basketball is. And if you don't like it, take your guys off the court, and we'll score without you being on there. That's fine. But, you know, where's the gentleman's agreement? Hey, we're going to stop playing at 1:48 if the score is so-and-so-and-so. Mm-hmm. We're going to stop playing at 2.5 minutes if the score is so-and-so-and-so. Play the doggone game to the end and all this stuff. Now, some things, there is a need. I shouldn't say a need. I hate to promote violence. But sometimes there has to be a little bit of frontier justice. Like, you know, when Najee Marshall and Jose Alvarado come to Zion Williamson's defense, you get tired of seeing your guy get beat up.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Somebody's got to stand up for him. And there's only so many clips or tape that Willie Green and David Griffin can send to the league office saying, hey, guy's getting fouled. Okay, the refs still aren't calling it, and there's no protection for the guy. So somebody has to put their foot down and say, okay, we're tired of this guy getting beat up, And if you're going to try to beat him up, if you're going to try to hurt him, there's going to be a price to pay. I get that. That's kind of an unwritten rule, but, you know, I understand that totally. But this other stuff, we're going to stop playing because the score is this or that. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, we don't want you to dribble between your legs too many times and try to embarrass me because, you know, the score. Play the game, man. Play the game.
Where everything is disrespectful. You should see the unwritten rules that Jim gives me to not disrespect him on the podcast.
When Zion goes down for the windmill dunk against Phoenix.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And they're just up in arms. And it's like, wait. You had a chance to not turn it over and get back on defense, right?
Right.
So what is he supposed to do? Just dribble down, stop, and just go over to the corner and dribble?
And don't you think turn of the pop over. That gave the crowd. Yeah, and look, I mean, look.
If you don't like it, stop him.
Yeah.
Legally. If you don't like it, stop him. Play the game all the way to the zeros, and then we won't have that problem instead of this whole, you know, we got this gentleman's wink, wink, and one team says, well, I didn't wink. You winked. Yeah. I didn't shake hands. You shook hands. My hand was behind my back. You extended your hand and I was like, hey, I'm gonna play to the end. So you get what you get.
I tell you what I can't believe sometimes is when a team, you know, we're talking about situations where maybe the game's already decided. I can't believe sometimes when I see teams who are down maybe 6 or 7 with 40 seconds left just concede the game.
Stop playing.
I think there was literally a website or maybe it was a blog, a Pacers blog, that was created that was called, it was something like 8 points in 8 seconds because Reggie Miller won a playoff game by scoring 8 points in the last however many seconds against the Knicks. And we've seen crazy things happen all the time with turnovers. I just don't understand why there's this rush to just, you know, call a game over before it's over. We've seen stuff happen all the time. I mean, I feel like one of the first things that you're taught when you're a kid growing up as an athlete, too, is to compete till the end of the game. So I have no idea why all of a sudden it's like the game's 48 minutes, but let's play 47:15 instead now.
I mean, don't you look at guys differently when they don't compete to the end? I mean, that's the whole essence of sports, competing. Going all the way to the end until the clock runs out. Mm-hmm. That's the whole essence of it.
And I can say too quickly, this is a quick story from when I played in high school. I had a stretch where I wasn't playing much. I got in a game where we were down by like 20, 25, and the other team just wanted to run the clock out. I started fouling people left and right because I'm like, I want to get the ball. I want to score. And all the, you know, I'm sure the people in the crowd were mad. The opposing coach was mad. What is this guy doing? Why is he fouling? And it was exactly what you said, JD. Yeah. It's like, I haven't played in a month. I don't want to sit here and watch you
can
dribble
you
the clock
the
out.
Can you calling that game?
I haven't played.
Graf would have hated me.
Oh, yeah. I haven't played. I've been practicing. Yeah, I'm going to hack somebody. I'm a hack. I want to get the ball back. I want a shot.
I had no idea the sheriff of Frontier Justice, Jim Eichenhofer. As always, man, I appreciate the time. I know you're about to head on over to shoot around. I'm interested in what kind of adjustments in 30 seconds. What adjustments do you expect to go see at shoot around maybe?
Well,
from Wednesday.
I think, you know, obviously you got to be more cognizant. They move the ball so well, 31 assists a game. They lead the NBA. And so you've got to be cognizant of your defensive rotations. Now, I think the Pels were a step slow the other night because of the travel situation and all that. But they're hopefully fresh-legged in this one because you've got to get back on defense. They're a fast-break team. You've got to be cognizant of your rotations. They shoot a bunch of threes. They make a lot of threes. So this is a team that is an energy team. You got to match their energy first and foremost. And the Pels did not do that in the previous game. So they've got to have their legs under them. They got to match the energy. Otherwise, you're going to give up another 125, 130. And so you can give up 120, 125 to that team because they'll give you 130. Mm-hmm. But you've got to be on your P's and Q's, especially in your defensive rotations, because they move the ball so well. I watched that game, and, man, it's tough to keep up with a team when they're moving the ball that well because the ball finds the guy who's in motion, and they have a lot of guys in motion. So they understand the spots to get to. They got an elite point guard in Tyrese Halliburton who understands how to get guys the ball and where to get the guys ball. And because of the way he plays, guys are so willing to move because they know, hey, if I get open, he's going to get it to me. You know, I'm going to get a shot. And so you got to be cognizant of him and hopefully maybe make him a little bit more of a scorer instead of an assist guy, because most of the time, if you get the assist guy to be a scorer, the other guys kind of stand around and start watching a little bit. And so maybe, you know, you want to play those guys and make him more of a scorer than an assist guy, because when everybody's involved, they're a tough team to deal with.
John DeShazer, color analyst. You can hear him again tonight on the call, 7 o'clock, Tip Town over at the Blender. Thank you, JD.
Thank you, guys. I appreciate it.
Thanks, JD.
All right, Jim, always a pleasure. We need, like, way more time with JD. It's just
yeah,
so
I love
much.
Talking to JD. I'm not
even talking about the basketball.
Smart.
I want to know, I love this. First off, Frontier Justice is a great slogan.
Hasn't been used. I like that. We need to use that more on the podcast.
And little did I know that you were the sheriff of Frontier Justice. I mean, I can just picture you like with the handlebar mustache, with that big old hat, the big old cloak and everything. I mean, to hear that you were the Charles Barkley of New York State high school basketball because you wanted to get your minutes in.
I wanted to get my shots up too.
Man.
No, I should clarify. I wasn't giving flagrant fouls to stop the clock. I was just giving a little, like, reach. Okay, I tried to steal the ball. It didn't work because I hit the guy across the arms.
You hyperextended fingers. Let's be honest. I mean, elbows, you dislocated fingers.
The good thing is there's no videotape of this. There's no evidence. I could say whatever and no one would ever know the difference.
We mentioned it. We were talking with him, but in all honesty, how do you think the Graf would have called that? Because he's ready to go home, right? The other team, I'm talking about, like, if he was calling the game for the opposing team, and in comes Jim Eichenhofer. All right, in come some guy named Eichenhofer. 1:14 left in this one. We're up 20. Look, and he starts talking about the next game. And right immediately, you just start hacking.
He'd be like, what is going on? What is with this number 12? Why is he?
You remember your number.
He probably would have said on
what are
the
we
air,
doing here? He,
at one point on the air, when maybe like my third foul in the next, in a, about a minute span happened, he would have said on the air, guys, we're going to have a dead air for about 45 seconds to a minute, however long it takes me to take my headphones off, walk down to the court, start screaming at number 12, and then walk back up here. Yeah. That's probably what would have happened during the broadcast.
You know what? I'm going to surprise that on him today in one of those opening segments in the pregame. Hey, if someone was to foul three times in the final minute 12 in a game the Pelicans are up 20, how would you handle that situation? I'll wait for his answer.
I can't
wait
to hear it.
That was Jim Eichenhofer in high school.
But you have to make sure you explain to him the background of why
I was motivated
to do that.
I will. Okay. I love that. But you will be known now as the sheriff of Frontier Justice. So we got to come up with a nice Western name for you as well, because you had nicknames back then, right? I mean, all the outlaws, like Billy the Kid or something of that nature. You know, but if you're the sheriff, we got to give you a nickname.
I just wanted to make sure that there was no garbage time. There's no garbage time in my basketball career. There's no running the clock out. Let's play. I'm gonna be fierce and intense until the buzzer sounds, and you're not gonna change my opinion on that.
I love that. The sheriff of Frontier Justice, Jim Eichenhofer. All right, man. Trending numbers, and then obviously the weekend showdown. I love this because look, every game matters. 22, including this one. We're not only just scoreboard watching, and you can feel the intensity, Jim. Since we've come back, really this week, you can see all these games matter. Mm-hmm. You can see the crowd, right? In that Dallas. Cleveland game that was a buzzer beater earlier this week. LeBron comes back down 20 in the fourth for a win against the Clippers. You sense it. Mm-hmm. They know. All these teams, all these players know these games matter. I mentioned it to John. For the Pacers, a one game difference, seventh, fourth.
Right.
So this game's huge for them.
Yeah, and I mean, we're officially in March. We all know what that means for college basketball, but for
Madness.
The NBA, I definitely think it means you've kind of turned the corner. You're through the dog days. All-star break is over. It's time to sprint to the finish. So the weekend showdown that I picked is a Sunday night game at 8:30 on ESPN between Oklahoma City and Phoenix. Now, Oklahoma City is 6.5 games ahead of the Pelicans, so it's not really something that we're considering as far as them. And by the way, I do think, you know, people have talked about, do the Pelicans still have a chance for a top-4 seed? I'm going to make an unwritten rule that we don't discuss that in depth until they get at least within three of fourth place. They're a little bit past that right now. They'd need to go on a winning streak to make that something that is part of the conversation. But anyways, Oklahoma City at Phoenix Sunday night. Phoenix right now is 35-24, which is a half game ahead of the Pelicans. Mm. They also have the tiebreaker with a 1-0 season series lead. Those teams don't play each other until April 1st, so the Phoenix Suns will have that tiebreaker for a while. But by the way, that game on Sunday for them against the Thunder starts a stretch of where they play five of their next six games against top three teams from either conference, including Boston twice. So Pelicans are slightly behind Phoenix right now, very narrow margin, But Phoenix is about to go into a stretch of schedule where it's going to be tough for them to win consistently. So we'll see how that impacts it. So that's the game. There's going to be some weekends, I'm sure, where I can pick a game where both of the teams playing are teams that are close to the Pelicans in the standings. That wasn't the case this week, but nonetheless, I think that's an interesting game to watch. As far as the trending number for this week and this Friday, my trending number is 6. And this is something that I thought was interesting to talk about and bring up. We focus so much on offense in basketball in the NBA. Pelicans are 6th in the league in defensive efficiency right now for the second year in a row. And to put that into context as far as franchise history, they've never finished higher than 6th place in defensive efficiency. They did it in the very first season that the team was here when they were the Hornets back in 02-03. They did it again, 6th place in 07-08, which is a season that I know everyone who follows this team remembers very well because it was the best season in franchise history. They won 56 games. But, you know, in the previous decade, really, during the Anthony Davis era, they were frequently in the bottom 10 in defensive efficiency, despite having, you know, one of the best, if not the best, shot blocker in the league during those years. They were always a team that was in the bottom half and struggled at that end of the floor. So they haven't even finished the highest they had finished before these last 2 years in recent times. They finished 9th in 16-17. So all of the years that Anthony Davis was here, those 7 seasons, the best they ever did defensively was 9th. And now in these last 2 seasons, they've been in 6th place both years. So again, I guess I reiterate, we focus a ton on offense. And when we talk about substitutions and who should play and who isn't playing well and who had a scoreless game, it always is that. But if you think about it, really, one of the big reasons why they had a winning record last season, despite having a million injuries and having things get sidetracked in January, was because they've been consistently good at the defensive end of the floor. And the same deal this year. They're 10 games over 500, but a lot of it is because of the end of the floor that we just rarely discuss. I think partly because there's just so many more intricacies to how a team becomes successful defensively that you can't measure in stats compared to offense, where we can say, like, okay, they shot this percentage, they did this from three-point range, they missed their free throws, so on and so forth. There's a long list of stuff, but just something I think, too, that we can give credit to the personnel and the coaching staff, the fact that they've been so high defensively. And also, too, I mean, there's several guys on this team that are not known as defensive players. So the fact that they've been able to rank so high 2 years in a row is a credit to some of the players, I think, that on this team that, like Herb Jones, perfect example, where he's such a great defensive player. And he's a big reason why they've been able to do so well defensively 2 consecutive years, and it's definitely propped up the record, and hopefully it's something that at the end of the season they'll be able to look back on and say, this is why we were able to get a top 6 seed in the West.
Well, good stuff and good information as always, Jim. So we got to go check out Shoot Around and then a game tonight. And then only, 2 games next week, Tuesday and Friday. So some practice time, yeah, I think, is going to be key for this team as well.
A lot of practice time. And I think, too, that I'm sure people are excited about this home game because the next home game after tonight isn't until March 13th. So we have quite a stretch here of practice days, like you mentioned, and then also there's a 3-game road trip that's spaced out with a couple extra days here and there to practice. So looking forward to being in the Smoothie King Center tonight because it's going to be a rare opportunity here over the next couple weeks.
Yeah, no doubt. That's Jim Eichenhoffer. Give a follow, as I said, over there on Pelicans.com, the 5 things to keep an eye on game day, and then there's post-game recaps as well. Plus, of course, right here on the podcast, Monday, Wednesday, Friday next week. So we will talk about that. Until then, enjoy the weekend, enjoy tonight's game, and we'll see you next time on the New Orleans Pelicans Podcast.
Thanks for listening to the New Orleans Pelicans Podcast. Join us 3 times per week on Pelicans.com, the Pelicans mobile app, the iHeartRadio app, or where you get your podcast. And be sure to give Jim and Gus a follow on X at Jim_Eichenhoffer and GCAT_17. We'll see you next time, right here on the New Orleans Pelicans Podcast.